welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Welcome to Write Through the Roof, and today I'm speaking with Kirsten and Marnie Kazai. Hi Kirsten, how are you going?
Hi Madeline. Everything's going really well.
Lovely to have you on the show. A little introduction about Kirsten. So Kirsten is a writer, editor, and educator. She holds an MFA and she writes poetry, short stories, and novels. And her latest book, The House of Azuli, an African-American Gothic novel, is out now. Thank you for sparing the time to have a chat with me today.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So how I like to start off is a few kind of warm-up questions. So I don't know if you're a yoga person, if you're doing a little bit of, you know, salutations to the sun or something, just get you all limbered up.
Okay.
So now, I might be being a bit kind of stereotypical here, but seeing that I think you write literary fiction, I tend to think that literary fiction people are pantsers, but are you a plotter or a pantser?
Definitely a pantser. I have tried to plot, and I can work with a loose structure, but if I try to create too much structure, it hinders the creative process. Mm. I think about it as though I'm going on a road trip and I know where I want to end up, but instead of mapping it out and creating an itinerary, I just get in the car and drive in that direction.
Mm. And do you actually work that way when you do go on a road trip, or are you one of those people who's like, oh no, at 2:12 we have to be back in the car?
No, I mean, I kind of look things over so that I have a sense of where I'm going, but I also like to leave room for adventure and surprise. Good surprises, not bad ones.
It's funny, I've asked this question a million times before, but I've just had the revelation about whether the plotting and pantsing actually goes from out of your writing into you as a person. It's just occurred to me just now.
Yeah, I think it does, because it speaks to an overall way that you organize your thoughts and your work. Mm. And I would assume that most people who are regimented in their writing are also fairly regimented in the rest of their lives. I like to, again, have a sense of the outcome and the purpose and where I'm going and such, but I also like to look at things as an adventure, so I don't want to limit my choices too much. I like to rely a little bit more on serendipity.
Cool. Okay, so you write poetry and short stories and novels. Which one is your favorite?
Gosh. I have to say that, you know, I really, really think that I am a diehard novelist. I really appreciate long-form fiction because it allows me to work really deeply and create a lot of complexity and layering. And I like poetry, but it's not something that I can turn on and off. I just kind of have to wait for the words to come. And so it's not really a reliable art form for me. And I like short stories, but again, I tend to find that I'll write a short story and then want to expand it into a novel.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And so when you are writing, what is your writing fuel of choice?
Oh, gosh. Well, depending on what I'm writing about and what's going on in my life, it's either tea. I drink Yorkshire Gold with vanilla cream. I'm like a diehard tea fanatic and, you know, had have different tea throughout the day. So I'll start with my Yorkie Gold, and then I'll go to, herbal or something green, then herbal, and wind down. But I like port or red wine or, just a little something. It depends what's going on.
That kind of sounds like it goes with the whole gothic thing, a bit of port.
Yeah, no coffee and cigarettes in my world.
But a little snifter of port.
Yes, isn't that elegant?
Yes. Cool. Well, it sounds like we've got to know you a little bit more. So let's get a bit more in depth. So how do you describe your writing? And are there any particular themes that you like to explore?
I think two of the best ways to describe my writing are dark and weird. very dark and very weird. And I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. I mean, my writing, it's very hard for me to stick to sort of pastel cheeriness. You know, I like grit and blood and meat in my work. So it's just where I tend to naturally find inspiration, and I keep going back to it. So I have tried to bring more levity and lightness into my work because, although by appearances I am sort of vampiric in some ways. I don't like the sun. I wear all black. I'm always like longing to live in some drafty abandoned castle.
Yeah, but you're in San Diego.
I know. And I am like the only person in San Diego that's wearing black tights in summer and carrying an umbrella and like grumbling about the sun. But
don't worry, come to Australia, you'll have some fellow people like that.
All my fantasies of traveling are to like cold, snowy places. But despite, my work and sort of my public presentation, I am a very silly and lighthearted, goofy kind of person. And so I've really kind of, it's been a challenge for me to want to bring some of that into my work, like try to write humor or something. And I just can't do it. So, I'm very content with my work being the way it is. And the themes that I tend to explore the most are love and romance and sex and death, the body, illness, spirituality, and I think more like metaphysics and ideas. So when I say romance, I don't mean in the way that you think of a romance novel, where it's the kind of formulaic meet cute, encounter an obstacle, they break up, they get back together, happy ever after sort of thing. But again, keeping within my style of writing, like I have this short story I wrote called Bleat, which was written for a contest at a writing convention for the prompt Love. And Bleat is the story of a little lamb, and it's told from her perspective, who lives with a farmer who puts Wellington boots on and comes out to her pen and reads her T.S. Eliot before commencing his acts of bestiality. Later, slits her throat and cuts her up and fries her and eats her with lamb chops. And she is observing this from the spiritual plane for sheep and talking about, is this love? I find it quite entertaining and hilarious. So that's the kind of, it's a lot of consumption. I tend to get into some religious themes because I was Well, I was raised in a church. I have both my grandfathers were ministers, as well as an aunt, my stepmother. I have a cousin who's a monk, a cousin who's a minister. My father was a minister as well. And so a lot of biblical imagery and language tends to creep in, whether I want it to or not. There's a lot about sacrifice and elements of cannibalism, but in a psychic or spiritual way. You know, I'm not writing like slasher thrillers. It's more about the meaning of embodying someone else or making a sacrifice. I don't know. It just always tends to go down these certain paths, whether I'm going there or not.
Great. Sounds like a lovely, twisted little world you've got there.
Yeah. But cheerful. And there's pie. I make pie and cookies, so.
Good. With the bestiality.
We're well fed on our journey. Yeah. Lamb chops.
So, the big question I like to ask. So, what do you think has been the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
The thing that I have most struggled with, I think, is very common for many writers, and that is learning to accept and apply valid criticism of your work. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're starting out, because it feels so good to, you know, just to complete a piece. And of course, there's this period where the work is precious and you're in love with your words. And then when sharing it with people who are more experienced, and I'm talking about, you know, a while ago when I was still learning, I mean, I'm always learning, but earlier in my career, it was a little hard for me to learn that I was often accused of writing purple prose. My writing has been called very ornate. And partially it's a stylistic choice because I consider myself a lyrical writer. But I also had to learn to step back and see what other people were saying, that, you know, if you decorate something so much, it will eventually end up obscuring what's underneath instead of enhancing it. And so that's kind of been a challenge. So I've limited myself to, like, you know, fewer adjectives and variation of sentence length, and just in my work with my own mentors and writing groups and students as well, you begin to see over time how you can cut back and pare away to really bring out. I mean, I think of it like sculpting in a sense, that you keep removing layers to reveal the shapes that are underneath. And your goal is to create something that is fluid and elegant and textured, but you do so in as streamlined a way as you can, working within your particular genre.
Do you let yourself, in the very first draft, do you just, because it sounds like you actually love doing all that description, and I can sometimes do that myself, do you just let yourself go the first draft and just lay it all on thick and then go back and go, actually, that's a little bit too much?
Yeah, I've definitely had to do that, where I you know, the first draft is work, but it's also play. And so I get to make whatever mess I want, and then I have to go back and clean it up. But having a resting period in between from creation to the editing allows me to do that and go back with a critical eye and not feel so hurt by my own or anyone else's editorial suggestions. I mean, you know, and that's just something that you have to work towards. And, you know, one of the lessons that I always heard was, just because it makes sense in your head doesn't mean it's going to make sense for your reader, right? Because you have to get everything out of your head onto the page so that they can understand it.
Absolutely. So are you trying anything new at the moment?
I am working on a project. It's a big idea that I have been flirting with for probably about 20 years and have made some attempts at writing and have felt that that it's too difficult for me at different stages. So in the book, Confessions of an Opium, an English Opium Eater by Thomas De Quincey, he talks about a project that he's working on as being a labor that is too great for the architect. And that is how I had felt about this particular novel, which is termed Girl's Town for now. And part of the complication with it is trying to mix these elements of nonfiction and fiction. And so I've moved around in a lot of different ways trying to find the right presentation for the material. And right now I've kind of settled on structuring it like an archival document. And so I'm incorporating some handwritten sections. I'm bringing in graphics. So I've got a big sketchbook and I'm starting to use drawings and diagrams and clippings and other, you know, visual elements to support the work in the novel so that it's kind of a dual reading experience. And it's really fun and challenging, but it's hard because it's different. And there aren't a whole lot of examples of that done. Mm-hmm. But I did find a great book recently that has been a source of inspiration for me in multiple ways. Let me see if I can find it and I'll tell you who it is. Her name is Cindy Crabb, and the book...
Oh dear.
The book is called Things That Help: Healing Our Lives Through Feminism, Anarchism, Punk, and Adventure. And it's really a compilation of these zines that she did in the 90s. So they're partially typewritten, partially hand-drawn, some cutting and pasting. And so that's been really good in helping to frame it differently, you know, and get away from the sort of strictness and order of the standard novel form. I do like experimental and hybrid literature. I just haven't really done a lot of it, so it's new, and I'm very excited to do more of it.
Sounds like a daunting prospect, but yeah, as you said, very exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So you've just pulled out a book and said this is what's helping you along the journey. So what other writers inspire you?
Well, I always say that Angela Carter inspires me because she was kind of my writing idol. And so some of the work that I've done in recent years has been compared to her, and that just made me swoon. I like Octavia Butler quite a lot as well. There's this book by Helen Zahavi that I love. And it was made into a musical or a play, I think. And it's this book about this girl who kind of goes off on some killing rampage. It's called Dirty Weekend. And a lot of it is told not in rhyming couplets like a poem, but it is very musical. And I just love it. It's like kind of like this Dr. Seussian style musical flow to her language. And she's talking about these really terrible crimes. But man, it is so fun to read. And I just love that. So incorporating some of those techniques where it's different than what you would normally find. You know, those are things that I would like to dabble with.
Cool. So Tell us a little bit about the House of Azuli. So what inspired that, and were you trying anything different when you were writing that?
Well, the House of Azuli is kind of the offshoot of a confluence of different ideas and events, one of which was a series of repetitive dreams that I have been having over a number of years about this big Gothic house. And it kind of became the setting for my characters. And then it just unfolded. I'm so bad at like identifying the moment that, you know, the seed took root and where it came from. It's just like some thing that was flowing through the air and landed in my brain. And then I was like, oh, that's an idea, and start writing it. So let's see. Am I trying anything different with that one? Well, I knew that I wanted to work within the Gothic genre. And so I did a lot of research on the writing conventions and some of these stylistic choices and craft elements that are vital to a Gothic work and identify it as such. And then I created a structure because the book has three different narrators and it's an epistolary novel. So there's a contemporary character, Lydia, who is reading the letters and journals of a Creole couple in 1850s Louisiana, and they live on a plantation. And so that was three distinct voices, and it was a story within a story, and there was a lot of mirroring. So I think of that novel as being a literary triptych, where there are three different stories, but they're all connected and they all interlock and face each other. So that was new and different, and that took a bit of shuffling and editing to get it all to work out. And I was very clear that I wanted to retain each narrator's section as a whole rather than intersperse them, so that you would be, you know, moving from voice to voice to voice. But each section is from beginning to end an immersive experience in that character's world. And I think that worked really well.
So this is more a question for myself, but when you're writing those stories like that, do you write the entire section for that character's viewpoint altogether? Or when you're writing, do you actually jump back and forward as though you're reading it from beginning to end?
Yeah, I would move back and forth in blocks. Mm-hmm. So because there is mirroring, if I was writing a section for Isidore, for example, about how he was having his breakdown, then I would take the ideas and energy and feelings from his experience, and I would write a section for his wife, Emily, from her perspective, because they're both living, you know, the same life together, but individually very different lives. And so just innate to enable myself to like inform the writing and say, okay, this actually happened on this day at this time, this is what was happening in this scene. Mm-hmm. I had to, you know, refer to those in a very concrete way for myself, just to kind of have the whole story hold together. But I would kind of inhabit each character for a period at a time and really get into their head in their world, and then take a break and then go work on another one.
Cool. All right. So I might actually start to wrap up now, let you get back to your big complex new novel that's going to take you into all kinds of different and interesting places. So if people are interested in finding out more about you and your work, where's the best place to find you online?
I am online in my website, which is kirstenimanikasai.com. I'm on Instagram at mehetabelli. And I'm also on Facebook at Kirsten I. Kasai. And if they're interested in any of my editorial services, I have a separate website called magicwordeditingco.com.
So your Instagram handle, is there a story behind that name?
There is a story. I'll share part of it with you.
Okay. If you feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's kind of a, there's two sides to it. So it's a name that I've used before in a different context, Mahedabel. But that name was taken from the old play, Archie and Mahedabel, mm-hmm. which my dad used to listen to as a radio play. It was about the cat and the cockroach in New York City. So I love it. I love M names. I wish I had an M name, like Madeline. It's my favorite letter.
You can change your name.
Well, it's a little complicated now that everybody knows me as soon.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to you. It's been really, really helpful.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed talking with you as well.
For listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinediest.com or madeline_diest on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinediest.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?